two, or three. Hey!
Hello again, everybody!
Now, if I didn't know we were doing a segment about Harry Carey, you would have frightened me. I'd be hiding under the desk right now. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. We don't always have guests at the very top of the show unless it's a special circumstance, and this is a special circumstance. A book about the legendary Harry Carey, called The Legendary Harry Carey, Baseball's Greatest Salesman, has just come out. The author of that book, Don Zeminda, joins us live in studio. Hello, Don.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Don. Do you do a Harry Carey impression? Because I tried it, at least. You got to give me credit.
It would be embarrassing if I tried.
Oh, come on.
You just have to spell out anything
come
backward.
On.
Oh, that's
yeah,
pretty good.
Let me hear you now.
That's excellent. Fair to say, a one-of-a-kind type individual, right, Harry Carey? There's not a whole lot of guys like him.
Absolutely. There'll never be anybody like Harry again, I don't think.
What do you think the key was to that?
Well, you know, I think the fact that he was so passionate and connected and so into whatever he was doing, you know, not just broadcasting, but just interacting with people and living his life. He was such a passionate individual, and that just showed up in everything that he did.
Yeah.
And it made for great radio and yes, great television when he worked in doing a game.
And yeah, you get both teams who like him because he was with the White Sox and then moved over to the Cubs, although more popular with the Cubs, would you not say?
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, I grew up as a White Sox fan.
Good man.
And absolutely. And my connection with Harry started in the early 70s when he really helped keep the White Sox in Chicago. I think that team would have been gone without Harry because for a while there, he was the whole show. So that was the Harry that I really fell in love with. And then, of course, he got bigger than ever when he went with the Cubs. But the White Sox years were incredible.
Boy, that's so true, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah,
he was the reason to go to a White Sox game
for
a long time.
In fact, the 77 season when they had the Southside Hitmen,
yeah,
that was such a colorful team. Bill Veeck was the owner. It was like a party every night, and Harry was the party host.
Yeah,
I got so into that team. I went to 40 games that year.
Wow.
I used to go every night. I would go to a whole series, and I was working for the post office then. I had to get up and start work at 6 in the morning.
Oh, my God.
I would go to a night game just because I didn't want to miss it.
Yeah.
That was how much fun it was.
Don, I can still remember the very first time I heard him on the radio. There was a rain delay during a game. So to fill time, he interviewed himself. And he would say, Harry, what's the most exciting game you've ever called? And he'd go, well, Carrie, you got to go back 25 years. So back and forth for about 10 minutes. And as a kid, I'm going, this guy's out of his mind. I love this guy.
Absolutely. But, you know, there's a great story about Harry by himself. Back in the 40s, when baseball broadcasting was pretty new,
yeah,
the teams did not go on road games. What they would do is they would have if they did a road game at all, they would have the broadcaster in the studio. This was in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And then they would have a ticker feed,
yeah,
you know, sending, you know, B1, S1,
right,
foul ball, whatever. And Harry would do the whole game. He would bring in crowd noises. He'd have, hey, hot dogs. He would just make this game come alive,
yeah,
so much that after a while, people didn't know whether he was actually at the game or not. And this became so popular that eventually they just said, let's send him on the road
games. Yeah, why not? That's so funny.
Did he start the take me out to the ball game thing?
He did. And in fact, that started with the White Sox in 76. It was really Bill Veeck's idea. Supposedly, Harry always sang the song just to the people around the broadcast booth. And Bill heard about it. And one night when Nancy Faust was playing the song and Harry was singing, he just turned on the PA system and suddenly the whole stadium could hear it and people went crazy. And that became the tradition for the rest of his life.
Please discuss the most interesting pairing of baseball announcers of all time. And you already know who I'm going to say. It's Harry Carey and Jimmy Pearsall. Talk a little bit about that pairing.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, they were so intense and so crazy. One of the guys that I talked to for the book was Ron Rappaport.
Yeah,
who's
great
just
sports
written
writer.
Written a great biography of Ernie Banks, but Ron was working for the Sun-Times back then. And Ron told me that Harry and Jimmy were making so much news that they actually had a guy in the Sun-Times offices listening to the game just in case they did something so wacky that it was going to be in the news the
right
next morning. They didn't want to miss it, but that's what Harry and Jimmy were like.
So he called baseball games. Were there any other sports that he was interested in?
Yeah, he did. He did University of Missouri football for like over 10 years. He did some Notre Dame games. He did some bowl games in football. And he did basketball as well. In fact, there's a great story about him doing a basketball game. He was doing the St. Louis Hawks, and they had a game in Memphis. I don't know, was it a preseason game or what? And Elvis was a big Harry fan.
What?
Elvis found out that Harry was in Memphis, called him up and said, "Harry, I'll send a limo out. We'll bring you out to Graceland." After the game, they did that. Harry hung out with Elvis. They ate ribs. They drank beer.
Wow.
They talked about everything, and that was Harry and Elvis.
I never knew that.
My favorite picture of all time is Elvis Presley and Richard Nixon together. Yeah. If you throw Harry Carey into that equation, it's even better. I wish so badly he was part of that.
Well, really, I mean, it's appropriate, though, because Harry, especially in the Cub years, he was a rock star.
Right.
You know, Bob Vorwald, who's the WGN producer, told me that when Harry would show up in spring training and get out of his limo, I mean, he was so mobbed. I mean, it was literally like U2 or the Beatles or some group like that.
Yeah.
He got so much attention.
All right. Tell me about this, because so far it's only in rumor stage, but you've done some research for the book, so you would know. His reason for leaving St. Louis was what?
Well, the story that always goes out was that he was involved with the wife of Gussie Bush's son. Gussie Bush was the owner of the Cardinals.
Yes.
You know, I've talked to a number of people about whether there was something going on or not. The consensus seems to be that there was.
Yeah.
They both denied it. He denied it, and then she gave an interview years later where she denied it. But whether there was something going on or not, people thought there was.
Yeah.
And this did not go down too well in St. Louis. And there were a couple other things going on in St. Louis. And believe it or not, there were actually people in the Budweiser organization that thought Harry was bad for their brand. I mean, considering what happened with the Cubs, you know, Cub fan Budman, that's hard to believe.
Right.
But Harry was different with the Cubs than he was with the White Sox and Cardinals. He was much more critical during his Cardinal days, especially. He would get on players. I mean, the White Sox, he was famous for getting on Bill Melton.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in the Budweiser organization didn't like that. They thought, you know, this is alienating people. This is bad for our brand. So it was kind of a combination of things. But I think the rumor, whether it happened or not, was really the big reason
Absolutely.
Why he left.
The book is called The Legendary Harry Carey, Baseball's Greatest Salesman. The author of that book is Don Zeminda. He's here. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in the World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Bill Laff, it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Don Zeminda. He's the author of The Legendary Harry Carey, Baseball's Greatest Salesman. Let's talk about the title for a little bit. Why do you refer to him as baseball's greatest salesman?
I really don't think anybody in baseball history did a better job of selling the experience of how much fun baseball was. Listening to the game, watching the game on TV, and especially being in the park.
Yep.
And, you know, one thing that was interesting about Harry was that during the strike in 1994, a lot of people turned away from baseball, said, you know, we're never going to go to another game. Harry really, during that time, worked tirelessly to try to stay connected with the fans. And he really, I think, had a lot to do with people coming back to the ballpark
mm-hmm.
because they didn't trust the players. They didn't trust the owners. They trusted Harry. They knew he was a good guy. He wanted them to come out, and they came out.
Do you remember on Saturdays for a while, he would broadcast the games from the bleachers, and he was so accessible all through the game, even when the game wasn't on, like during a commercial break, fans would come up and have pictures taken with him, have him sign autographs. He loved every minute of it. It looked so good to watch him work.
Yeah, you know, that actually started in St. Louis, but it really picked up in Chicago when he was with the White Sox.
Yeah.
They used to do every Wednesday afternoon if they had a home game, Harry would do the game from the bleachers. And I have some sound clips from those games, and it's insane because like between pitches Harry's talking to the fans he's buying people beer
I mean, it's so fun to listen to.
I mean, it really is a big party.
Yeah.
And you know, you just had to be there, and the White Sox people said, you know, within a year or so those became the most popular seats. Everybody wanted to be close to Harry because they didn't want to miss out on what he was doing.
Are there any things that you found out that really surprised you about Harry that you hadn't heard before?
You know, one thing that's kind of funny, I heard this from Al Lerner, Big Al.
Mm-hmm.
when Harry started becoming an entrepreneur, somebody came up with the idea of getting a beverage called Holy Cow. It was a line of soft drinks.
Pop. Yeah.
Yeah, and they thought to roll out this product, they would have Harry leading a cow down this little aisle to sort of promote the product.
Yeah.
And Al told me Harry was terrified of the cow.
Really?
Didn't want to go near him. And Al had to do it himself and the beverage tank.
That's too bad. Speaking of drinks, what is the 300,000 drink challenge?
Well, I actually heard that one from Grant DePorter, who's the CEO of the Harry Caray's Restaurant Group. Apparently, after Harry died, they were going through his artifacts, and they found what they called Harry's drinking diary. And this was back in the days when you could, you know, have a three-martini lunch, and you could write it off as a tax write-off. Yeah. So Harry would, wherever he went, he would write down, you know, I went to Pete Miller's and had three drinks, and then I went on to this place and had two more drinks. And so he had a record, you know, apparently for tax purposes. So Grant and his guys went through it, and they calculated based on Harry's nightly average and how many years Harry had been drinking, what his total was. And they came up with 300,000 drinks over the course of his life.
That seems low.
Boy, you know,
that seemed low.
And, you know, the man only lived to be 84 years old. Imagine what would have happened if he'd been taking care of himself.
How was he as a guide? Both his son and his grandson went on to do what he does, call baseball games, Chip and Skip Caray. What was the relationship like with them?
You know, it was difficult because Harry was divorced a couple of times before he met Dutchie. And in fact, Harry had a difficult childhood himself. He never knew his father. His father apparently went away to World War I and never came back.
Yeah.
His mother died when Harry was fairly young. He was raised by an aunt and uncle, and then the uncle left. So it was a really difficult childhood situation. I talked to Chip at some length about Harry, and Chip was very candid about it. He said Harry was very good at being Harry, the life of the party.
Mm-hmm.
He was not so good at being dad and granddad. But he really changed over the course of his life, and especially Dutchie had a lot to do with that. I mean, Dutchie's an amazing woman. I talked to her as well. She's 90 years old. She's lively as ever.
Yeah.
You could see how if anybody could keep up with Harry, Dutchie
she was the
could.
Girl.
Yeah, but Dutchie had kids of her own, and you know, Dutchie was very family oriented, and really Dutchie helped Harry reconnect with his son and his grandson, and really, but you know, by the time Harry died, he was going to work with Chip on Cub broadcast, and then that didn't happen because he had the heart attack and then died before the season started. But, you know, both of them were really looking forward to working together. That relationship
would have been
had
great.
Really changed.
Yeah.
Harry Caray, larger than life, so much fun. Can you think of anyone else who could hold his microphone? Can we compare him to anyone else today or even in the past? I don't think so.
You know, there are people that are probably as famous as Harry, you know, Red Barber, or I worked in L.A. for a long time, and Vin Scully comes to mind. But there's nobody like Harry, and I don't think there ever will be anybody like Harry again. I mean, I don't think that an announcer today could get away with the kind of stuff that Harry did, particularly when he called himself the voice of the fan, but he was sometimes the voice of the angry fan.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
And, you know, he called the owner of his team an idiot. he was talking about Chuck Tanner, the manager of his own team. He said, he did a terrible job. They should fire him. I mean, who could get away with that? Only Harry. Only Harry had the chops to do that. But baseball has changed. I mean, now the announcers they're employees of the team,
sure.
Essentially. You don't want the announcer running down your product. And these guys make millions of dollars now. So they're very careful about not being too negative. So I think that what kind of stuff that Harry did, that will never happen again.
Yeah.
But thank God that it did happen.
Every once in a while, Ron Santo, you know,
he
just
got
because,
close.
Right? Sometimes he'd be right in the neighborhood.
Because he was so passionate.
Because he was so passionate and wanted so badly.
Yeah.
Wendy and I have discussed this. When the Cubs finally won the World Series a few years ago, all of us thought about Ron Santo, and we thought about Harry Caray and the guys who gave their lives to calling those games and didn't get to see the end result.
Yeah.
How sad that is.
Yeah, and Hawk Harrelson comes to mind, too.
Sure, for the White Sox.
But he's another guy there. He's gone. there won't be somebody like him again either. Sure. But Harry was totally unique.
And Ron had his moments that were priceless, but it wasn't all drawn out like Harry. Harry was like always on.
Yeah.
Always
no
on.
No question.
The book is called The Legendary Harry Carey, Baseball's Greatest Salesman. Don Zeminda is here with us. We want to thank you for coming in. You had a couple of book signings over the weekend. They went well, I take it?
Yes, they did.
And you came in before you hop on a plane to go back to where you live. Where's the best place to get your book?
I was in Anderson's bookshop signing books over the weekend in the south suburbs, but really wherever books are sold, the books should be available.
Perfect.
Perfect.
So nice to meet you, Don. Congrats on the book.
Thank you.
Really well done.
Holy cow!
Hey!
Come on, hello again, everybody. Why doesn't anyone else even try it?
I don't know.
Well, because we heard you first.
Right.
All right. Bertrand, I want to hear you do it. All right, that's
not
bad.
Bad.
Or
very
are
nice.
You choking? I couldn't tell which it was. Right.
I wouldn't be a home run in the phone booth.
That's pretty good.
It's very good.
There's a little Harry in all of us. That's what I got to tell you. Don, good luck with the book. Thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
Wendy, I've asked Jasmine to play this, the theme from Unsolved Mysteries, because I was involved in an unsolved mystery over the weekend.
You're kidding me. I love these stories.
See if you can figure this out, because I've now spent 3 days trying to figure this out. I can't figure this out. On Friday, yes, Steve?
The butler with the candlestick.
That's what a lot of people told me. But I don't know. The butler was in the billiards room the whole time,
Steve. That's what he wants you to think.
Uh-huh. All right. On Friday, I get home after work, and there is a package waiting for me outside my front door. Now, that's not unusual because I order things from eBay all the time. I win things on eBay, have them sent, not a problem.
You win things, that's
I win
cute.
Things.
You buy them.
Well, but there's more sport involved than that. You're bidding against other bidders. It's very competitive, the eBay. So it's not strange for me to come home and there be a box. So I examine the box. I'm trying to think back. Have I bought anything on eBay recently? I don't think so, but maybe this is something from a few weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago that I forgot about. I bring the box in. The box isn't large. It's maybe 5 inches by 5 inches. It's a fairly decent sized box, but nothing gigantic. I look to see if it's for myself or for another member of my family. It's for me.
Was it ticking?
No, it was not ticking.
All right, good.
No. So my name is on it. My address is on it. Everything's correct. I take it inside. I open the box. What's inside is a pouch like
a fanny pack?
No. Like a small velvety pouch.
Like a Crown Royal bag?
Yeah. Yes.
Or like a marble bag, I was thinking.
Yes. Both of you are correct, only significantly smaller.
All right.
I would say a tenth the size of a Crown Royal bag, an eighth the size of a marble bag. Not great at fractions, but roughly. Approximately an eighth and a tenth. So now I'm thinking, I can't wait to see what I've bought myself and don't remember, but it must be nice because it's in this nice velvety bag. So I open it up and inside, two things. First, a cardboard card with a picture of a unicorn on it, and then a necklace with the letter C. So I think back to when and why I would have purchased a velvety bag with a unicorn card and a necklace with the letter C.
No one in your family's name starts with a C.
There's no one in my family's name starts with C. We all love unicorns. That's the one thing that my family has in common. Each of us a bigger unicorn fan than the others. So that part makes sense. You go, well, we're a family of unicorn-loving people. Why not? But it's the necklace that's disturbing to me. I've brought it in, by the way, to show
you.
Okay. All right. I didn't bring the box in because it's just a box with my name
on it. Was there a return address on
the
box?
No. There is no return address.
May I see
it? Showing Wendy Exhibit A.
All right. It's a gold tone letter C with a link chain that connects to the upper half of the C and the bottom part of the C.
Yeah.
The unicorn card is all included. It's not an additional thing.
Right.
Oh, I thought there was a...
It's to mount the necklace on.
Yes.
Right? All right. So for a couple of days, I'm thinking about this is all day Friday, all day Saturday. My wife tells this story to a neighbor. She's having lunch with a neighbor yesterday, and she tells her the story, and the neighbor's mouth just drops open. And it's a strange story, but it's not a mouth drop open story. And our neighbor says to my wife, here's why that's strange. My daughter, she has a daughter who's in college, just got a package a few days ago, and it's a baby's woolen cap. Now, her daughter doesn't have any babies, and even if she did have a baby, this isn't the time of year to buy your baby a woolen cap. This is the worst time of the year to buy your baby a woolen cap. So her daughter, and again, similar box, no return address on it at all, a nice woolen cap, you know. But her daughter said, I don't know who sent me this, because I don't have a baby who needs a woolen cap. So isn't that odd? And I mean, we didn't go house by house on my block to find out if others had similar circumstances. But why are people sending people things that don't make sense?
I really don't have an answer for that.
You really didn't go to your other neighbors?
No.
Because I was thinking your neighbor was going to say, oh, that's for my daughter, Carol. I ordered it from her.
Right.
For her. They must have mixed up the address.
That would make sense.
And you would have said, oh, that cap was for my wife, Terry, who's right. got a really small head. And
she's a huge,
she has a baby head.
She has a big heart, but a very small head.
Tiny baby head.
Right. The slightest draft really sets her off.
Okay, that's bizarre.
It's crazy.
Crazy enough that you got this.
Yeah, but even then, crazier that it's going around in my neighborhood.
Now, was it delivered to this girl's college or to their house?
To the house. She's in for the summer.
I think the postman's playing with you.
I would agree with that, except the box is obviously, it's from some distribution center. Everything about it it's my address, it's my name, and in her case, it's her address and her name. How can that be?
I am flummoxed.
Isn't that crazy?
And speechless. That has never happened to me before.
Right.
I really have no idea.
My family, the practical people they are, made a list of all the people we know whose names start with a C. They're like, well, the next time, my sister-in-law's name is Chris. The next time you see Chris, give her the necklace.
Does she like unicorns as well?
No, she does not.
She's the only person.
She does not. No, that's, I know that for a fact.
I don't want to be rude. But whenever you preface it by saying that, it's not like it's a very expensive piece of jewelry.
I wouldn't know what sort of a value to put on this, but I would say under $10. Is that fair? Would you say that this necklace probably... I could take it to a shop to have it tested to see if it's real gold, I'm guessing by the unicorn card, it's not.
Usually you don't put 14 karat or 24 karat on a unicorn card and cover it in plastic.
Not always. I would also, this is strictly a guess because I'm not a jeweler, I believe the velvet bag is the most valuable item of the three. I think if you're pricing the card, the necklace, and the velvet bag is probably what costs the most in this equation.
That's not real velvet. That's polyester.
It's a fake velvet.
Joe has a question for you.
Sure.
We can all be super sleuths here and help Bill try and solve this mystery. Joe, how are you?
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill.
Joe, help me. I don't know what this is. What does it mean?
Well, my question to you is, were you billed for anything out of your bank account?
No. We looked that up to see. No charges on our Visa, no charges. eBay goes through the system called PayPal, so I checked my PayPal.
Right.
There's been nothing taken away. No.
Okay, well, that's what I was wondering. Because if you didn't pay for it and you got it, well, I guess you get something for free.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although something you'll never use.
You don't know that.
Yeah, unless they bill you down the road.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Because you kept it.
Maybe, Joe, somebody sent him that C for cool, because you're cool.
Yeah. I bet that's what it is.
It very well could be. One of your fans out here might have done it.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Bye.
That is truly bizarre.
I don't understand it.
All right, well, more theories. We would love to hear them. 312-981-7200.
Is there something you know you've ordered that you haven't received?
No.
You know that they might switch the order?
When I saw the box, Steve, my first thought was, I'm playing out in my head, have I ordered anything recently? And the answer is no. Everything I've ordered, I've received.
God, I wish I could claim responsibility. I wish I could think of something like this just to bug you.
Because it would work.
Yes.
Because I just lay in bed now going, why is this here?
I would truly like to have this solved by the end of the show today.
That would be a nice thing.
Because I can't sleep now.
All right. I'm with you.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and if you have any theories about the mysterious sea necklace, Maybe I should.
Yes. Here, Wendy. Welcome back. Welcome back from your vacation.
No, it's just a commercial.
Yeah, all right. Well, it's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.
It's us. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. If you're just tuning in, over the weekend, I was involved in something of a mystery. I'll just give you a quick rundown. Package outside of my house on Friday. I brought it in. I didn't order anything, but there was my name and my address right there on the box. I opened it up to find a very small, velvety pouch. Not real velvet, as Wendy has pointed out. An imitation velvet. Faux velvet.
It's not Corinthian velvet.
It's not rich Corinthian velvet. Inside, a card with a picture of a unicorn, and then a necklace with the letter C on it. None of that applies to me.
No, and some ideas for you, Bill. Nancy has an idea. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Hi, do you have a way for Bill to solve this great mystery of life?
Well, Bill, do you still have the outer packaging?
I do. I have it at home.
Okay, did it have a tracking number on it?
I didn't see a tracking number. I looked for one, and there wasn't one.
Oh, which company delivered it?
Was it UPS?
UPS, FedEx?
I don't know the answer to that because it was there on my front step as I was coming in. I had mail that day, but it didn't say
well,
if it came
UPS,
from...
it would have a UPS return address or something that to show that it was shipped through that, FedEx, or USPS, which is the United States Postal Service.
There's only a sticker with my name, address, and zip code on it. Nothing beyond that. Nothing.
Because if you had a tracking number, regardless of which company, you could start there and work
yeah.
your way backwards.
Right.
Because...
No,
if
none
you track
of that.
It online, then nothing. Oh, well,
none of that was included.
Like, that could help.
Postage on it, like canceled postage, because it sounds like somebody
there
may
was,
have just dropped it.
No,
off.
There was canceled postage. There was stamps on it, so stamps
oh,
would indicate U.S. Postal Service,
yeah.
right?
Well, it's.
You would think, yeah.
I would go to the post office and see if there's any way you can track any information because you think you got somebody's valuable C necklace.
Oh, all right, very good.
Maybe somebody just dropped it. Would it fit in your mailbox?
Yeah.
No.
Five no, by five. It was slightly larger than the mailbox would accommodate. Just a little bit.
Okay.
Close, but no. But all great questions. Okay. Every one of them.
Thank you, Nancy. Sharon wants to share a story. Hi, Sharon.
Hi there. You know, something similar to this happened to my mother in her 90s, living in a retirement community with around-the-clock caregivers. She could not even use the phone, couldn't leave her apartment. And one day I was there and checked the mailbox, and there was a package in there. And I opened it up, and it was full of little spoons. It was so weird. And it came regular mail, but... the postage was not stamps. It was like a stamped amount
yeah.
for the postage.
Yeah.
But the return address was all in Chinese.
That's even stranger.
Yeah. So I bet yours came from China.
It's possible.
Do they just send us gifts willy-nilly?
Yeah, it's just out of nowhere. So immediately, the only credit card she had, I contacted them, and there was no charge. It was just a mystery. At the time, she was unwell, and we were preoccupied with other things. So we just kind of threw it out, showed it to the people that were in management
yeah.
at her retirement community. But
and it was
yeah.
a one-time thing with her, right? It wasn't like every month she didn't receive another spoon.
No, that's what we were afraid
of. Spoon of the month club.
That's what we were afraid of. Spoon. But what would she, a 95-year-old woman, be doing with all these little spoons? It was very strange. Very, very strange.
So,
and like I said, it was from China. There, I kept looking it up online to see if I could figure out where it was, and I really couldn't. It was pretty bogus. But
very
I guess
strange.
It happens. I don't know. Blame it on Chinese.
Well, see, from China.
China, not Chinese.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. Have a great day.
I couldn't have a great day knowing that
not
I
after
received
this.
Something
not after
like
this.
This.
Now, my other fear was, and I know this is irrational, but it doesn't stop me. Remember a couple years ago there was a scam where people were receiving checks? This company would send you a check, and then just by depositing it in your bank account, there was some sort of a tracker on the check, so then they had access to your checking account. Do you
right,
remember this?
Right, because they'd get the canceled check, and
right.
it would have your account number
right.
on it.
I was trying to figure out if this was something like that, but I can't figure out how it would be.
Well, you're not paying
anything.
Yeah,
there's no cost on my end. But just by receiving it, if somehow, does that legitimize my name and address? But they had my name and address.
No, because they don't know that you opened it. They just know that it was delivered, but you could have thrown it out. Or...
That's true.
I am really bothered by this.
I don't think you can get a computer virus like that without actually having it on a computer.
It has C to for be... computer.
Oh, very good idea.
I was thinking Carl.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm open to anything within reason. I just can't figure it out.
I have a problem of buying magazines from people that come to my house.
This
happened several years ago where a woman came up and you guys all scared me. I sat her down because I will talk to anyone who will listen to me. I got her some lemonade and we sat on the porch for a while and I ordered two magazines and it was like, I don't know, $150. And you guys said, you know, I don't think you're ever going to see that. So I canceled the check. I had to pay $25 to cancel the check.
Yeah.
Well, it happened again and I bought just one magazine this time and I didn't offer her lemonade. And it was just a student who was trying to make money.
Sure.
And I have the receipt, and this was, I realized now, a year ago that I ordered it, and I never got Songwriters Magazine for Michael. So I checked the website on the actual receipt, and it said that it is unsafe. You cannot go on this website because none of the information panned out.
Oh.
So there was a phone number I called, and the phone number was disconnected.
Oh.
So I just buy magazines and never get them. You get little surprise gifts.
And never order them.
I don't know which is better.
I'm not sure one is better than the other.
If it was a bee, would you have worn it?
I'd wear it right now, yeah. Yep.
Is there someone here with a C name that you can give it to them?
Not to his face.
Well, not...
Wow.
I would think a woman would wear it. A guy wearing it.
Well,
you need more of a medallion.
Yeah. It's not overly feminine, but it's not. Again, even if it was a bee, I'm almost positive I wouldn't wear it. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't wear it.
The picture of it in my mind is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Maybe you should take it to the post office. Oh boy, here's an interesting story.
I do have to say I have a very good relationship with the woman who delivers our mail through the post office, and I can ask her if she remembers on Friday.
Definitely ask her if she delivered that package.
Yeah, maybe she'd remember. Although. This is a woman that probably delivered 200 packages on Friday.
You said you had a good relationship with her.
I do, but I don't know. She spent all day delivering packages. She wouldn't remember who got what, would she?
She would remember.
Yeah, all right.
And maybe. If it was UPS or FedEx, there'd be a tracking number on it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it came through. And they must not have sent it registered, you know, where you have to sign for it.
Right.
So no tracking. Charlotte, you had an interesting story to share with us?
Yes, I do. Years ago, on Halloween, I came home. It was dark. It was after work. And there was a wooden box outside my garage. And it was about the size of a casket. And I got out, and my husband was gone, so I was there by myself. And I looked all around. It was all sealed up. It wasn't like it opened. And I thought, well, what is this? It was really kind of scary. Like I said, it was Halloween. I thought, is somebody playing a joke on me? And so I called my neighbor, and he came over, and he looked at it, and he couldn't figure out what it was. And so it was just really creepy. So he put it inside the garage for me so it wouldn't be outside. So then I thought, I don't know if I want this thing in my garage.
Right.
It was really kind of scary. So anyway, finally, I called my son. He was away at college. And I said, John, I have this big box that was left outside my house. It's a wooden box about the size of a casket. Do you happen to know anything about this? And he said, well, maybe. And I said, what do you mean, maybe? Well, come to find out, he had a big fish tank in his dorm room.
Mm.
And his roommate had asked his dad if he would build a big box that they could, a wooden box that they could put that fish tank on. So his dad, before I got home, had delivered that box.
Ah.
So anyway, I called his dad and I said, the next time you deliver a coffin-sized box to my house on Halloween, would you please put a note on it?
Right.
And he just burst out laughing.
That makes sense.
weirdest thing that, you know, I thought, I cannot sleep in this house with that thought. I didn't know if something would explode.
Right. I don't blame you. But at least your mystery was solved, Charlotte, and we're glad that's true. Bill, I don't know what we're going to do with yours. Thank you so much, Charlotte.
I could have sold it to Charlotte. Did you hang up on her already?
No, she's still on hold. You want us to get her number and address?
Maybe I'll sell it to her.
All right, coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He is in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here, 720 WGN.
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bang, bang. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bang, bang. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang,
walla. This is your preview of Lollapalooza. I'm Bill, that's Wendy. Look who's in the studio, Wendy. It's our friend, noted pet expert Steve Dale.
I'm here.
Hi, Steve.
Hey.
You're very orangey today.
I've even had an orange hat.
Your shirt's orange, your hat's orange.
Yeah.
It's more like a burnt sienna.
Yeah?
Don't you think?
What?
Yeah.
Is that bad?
No, it's good.
Wendy had the very big box of crayons when she was growing up.
I had the 72.
Wow. Rich people.
Orange to me is bright orange. This is more muted. Would you
agree? Yeah, it's a muted orange, but
looks
it looks good on
muted.
You. Are you in autumn? What is your season?
It's hard to mute me. I don't know.
No?
I don't know. Right now, it is always my season.
Yeah. Steve.
Yes.
Let's talk about pets. You're a noted pet expert. What about this heat with the pets?
Well, right now, it's not so bad. But here's the thing. So people leave dogs, and I beg people to understand that dogs in hot cars do not do well. And people say, oh, I don't really understand why, because I could sit in a hot car for 10 minutes. Well, first of all,
You wouldn't.
You would never do that. But above and beyond that, dogs do not do as well in heat as people do. It turns out that the way they release heat by panting.
Yeah, they don't sweat like we do.
Is not as efficient as sweating like a pig or a person. It's just not.
Do pigs sweat?
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, because that saying, I was wondering
if that's
true. But also, if we were sitting in a hot car, we'd either have the window all the way down or we'd have the AC going. When people leave a dog in a car, they crack the window because they don't want somebody to come in and steal their dog, and they're going to fry from the inside out.
We need the car guy here to help us, but there's a car.
Click or clack?
No, GN's car guy. He's
Tom Appel?
Yeah. He would know. So he's great.
He is good.
Yeah, he is. And he would know. So there's a car that's either out or coming out that you can leave the car, and it's called the dog mode.
What?
And you could turn off the engine and the air conditioning stays on.
Oh, I want that for me.
When is that available, Steve?
Well, I'm not saying it's... I don't know anything else about it. Yeah. It's an interesting idea. But my point is that even walking down the street...
Tesla introduces dog mode to keep pets cool inside a car.
Great idea.
Just don't bring your dog with. They don't want to sit inside the car.
Sometimes the best solution is not to bring your dog with, as much as we want our dogs with us. The other thing people don't realize is that not only do dogs not efficiently cool off, certain kinds of dogs really have a hard time. So today, you walk down the street, it's a bit humid out, but it's not, I don't know what the temperature is, 80-ish, not even, right? It's okay, it's somewhat comfortable.
Right.
But for lots of dogs, it's hot today, really hot today, to take a walk that's more than a couple blocks long. A bulldog, a French bulldog, an Afant pincher, a Japanese chin. Those dogs that look like they walked into a wall.
Yeah.
You know, the dogs with pushed-in noses.
Yeah.
The boxers, some of the pit bulls.
I would expect Bill to say that.
Right, not you, Steve. You're a noted pet expert.
I took his line.
Expectations
they have a smushy face.
Come on.
A smushy, cute face.
It's a cute face that pug, for example, has.
Yeah.
But the result is that they don't do very well in this kind of weather.
And in the hot sun, I'm kind of stupid. I didn't realize this. This is the first time I've had a completely black dog.
Yeah, dark colored dog.
And he seems to tucker out a lot. Tiki was dark, but he had some white in him. Kona's all black.
Makes a difference. Yeah. So if you, we know almost instinctively on a day that's sunny and 90, you just don't wear a black shirt.
Right.
Well, you do because it's cool.
Well, right.
not today necessarily, mm-hmm. but most people wouldn't, right? I mean, just kind of know
right,
that.
Right, you wear white because, to reflect the
right,
heat.
Exactly. But dogs can't take off their coats and do that if they're
it's a trick I'm working on with Kona.
That would be amazing.
I'm looking at the calendar. I have set alerts with me and my phone to remind me of when to give heartworm and the
month.
Other right. So I do
and
it the first
flea
of
and
yes.
Tick you know, so people think that oh my gosh, I don't need to do heartworm because I don't see mosquitoes. And for cats, for example, they never get out. Well, maybe the cat doesn't go out, but mosquitoes come in.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know anyone who's never had a mosquito in their house. But moreover, mosquitoes do carry deadly to our dogs and cats heartworm disease. And it's something we can avoid. The preventives really work. Do it. The other thing that a new study just came out about ticks in big cities. So people think...
I don't take my dog camping. Why do I need
right,
to do it?
Exactly.
But you do.
You do. For a variety of different reasons. So in some places, there are deer. The deer ticks are black-legged ticks. Carry Lyme. And other tick disease, too, by the way. Ticks like to share. So they will sometimes give us not only Lyme, but another tick disease, a cocktail, if you will, of tick diseases. And they can give our dogs the same. And we know that dogs are a sentinel for tick disease. So if your veterinarian, first of all, says, tick disease is happening, protect your dog, I'm seeing it wherever you are. Then you have to think about protecting yourself as well. But it
can
really
I get
is
it
happening.
From the dog? Like
no.
If, okay.
No, you cannot get...
I sometimes kiss him.
That's okay. You cannot get...
I know, I said that just for you.
You like it. You cannot get tick disease from your dog. However, what you can understand is that if the dog has it, first of all, you should have prevented it in the first
right.
place because you can.
Wendy had ringworm a few weeks ago. How'd she get that, Steve?
Well, that you can get from a dog.
No, yeah. I got a postcard from Molly Ringwald.
Oh, I'm
That's
sorry.
What it was.
I read that wrong. Sorry.
Same thing, almost.
Same thing.
Close enough.
Yeah.
So ticks are, I mean, you wouldn't think of an urban park like Lincoln Park.
Yeah.
And there's no, to my knowledge, there are no deer in Lincoln Park. So why is there tick disease? And here's what's happened. For years and years and years, people like Bill have gone up to Wisconsin or Michigan or Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
and they hike in the woods. You're really good at
yep.
that with your dog.
Yep.
You come back with your dog,
mm-hmm.
if you got
Maybe.
A dog. Yeah, if you had a
we'll
dog.
See how he does hiking.
Uh-huh. And you'd come
You can go to Ishnala with your dog.
That'd be fun.
That would be fun.
I'd like that.
Yeah, it's a supper club.
Yeah.
So you come back with
Pupper
your dog.
Club.
And what happens is the tick falls out, you know, and this is happening year after year after year after year after year. And there's lots, if you're a tick, there's lots to eat in Lincoln Park. You know, the little bunny rabbits, the
great
squirrels.
Restaurants.
Yeah.
There's that. And also there are city rats, which ticks like, or people. So the ticks have proliferated, and despite the winter vortex, overall our winters have been more mild, so you throw that into the mix.
Uh-huh.
And there are tick problems, not only in Chicago, in big cities all over the country.
What is Mayor Lightfoot doing about the ticks, Steve?
You know, I haven't asked
Come
her about
on.
That, but I know
These
what
GOP
you can
ticks.
Do. You can see your veterinarian
FOP,
about
FOP
it.
FOP
also, there's a vaccine for Lyme disease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve, for sharing that with us.
All right, we are going to take a break, but there's a caller, an interesting call
a
that
caller.
We would like you
okay.
to take. 312-981-7200, and we're also going to talk about people who may be allergic to cats. There may be some
Oh, it's amazing!
Relief, so
this
we'll take a quick break.
Science is incredible. You won't believe what you're about to hear.
He's noted pet expert Steve Dale. I'm Wendy Snyder. That's Bill Leff at 720 WGN.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa!
Some pussycat news that's coming up, but can we take a phone call first, Steve Dale?
Of course, yes.
I don't want to make Joe hang on any longer. Joe, you have a doggy question for noted pet expert Steve Dale?
Yes.
Hey, Joe.
My daughter has two dogs. They're about 4 or 5 years old, I believe. They're about 55 pounds apiece. Anyway, she just recently moved to a new building, and she has to walk up one flight of stairs. Her dogs have never had to walk upstairs since they were born, or down. And now she's having a major problem with them because they won't do it. And she has to carry them, each one of them, up and down the stairs when she takes them out.
And at 55 pounds, that's you know, heavy. It gets worn out.
Yeah, she's getting tired of it, too.
Well,
but they've been going through this for about a week now.
Yeah, she could think of it as like an alternative to a health club. But other than that, what I would suggest is use something really, really good to lure the dog step by step by step.
Well, she tried treats, and that doesn't do a thing.
Has she tried? Well, really, are the dogs treat motivated in general?
Yeah, you can pretty much get them to follow you anywhere when you have treats. But they won't do it. And if you try to force them, they'll get on the floor or they really get scared about it.
So maybe they're not high enough quality,
Are they rickety steps?
No.
They're inside steps. They're good steps.
Okay, so heavy artillery treats take out the really good stuff. So cold cuts, low fat, low salt. Hot dogs, low salt if you could find them, or turkey dogs. First of all, I mean, use the really good stuff in small pieces, but use the really, really good stuff. That's number one. Number two, Wendy's question is right. So if the steps are slippery, I didn't ask the age of the dogs. So it's probably the unfamiliarity since both dogs have the same issue. But if they're slipping and sliding on the stairs, that makes matters worse. So if the stairs are carpeted, that's better. But to lure them up patiently, and she should be able to do it with treats or toys if the dog is more toy motivated.
And do you go one step at a time and then praise them? Like if they walk up one step, make a big deal about it?
Yeah, hope there aren't a thousand steps, but yes.
They don't want to come near her when she's on the stairs. And now when they're outside and they go to go back in, they don't even want to go back in because they know what's in there.
Well, you could.
They're brothers. They're 5 years old.
So installing an elevator is not a solution to this?
Yeah, Joe, check out my portable dog elevator. It's at our Facebook page.
Now, you would think that'd be a good idea, but I thought maybe you've heard of something like this where you can.
Of course, I have heard of it.
This happens, Steve, with some regularity,
Oh, gosh, yeah. So if you adopt a greyhound, for example, from a racing track, those dogs have had no experience with lots of things, including steps.
Yeah.
So you can teach dogs, old dogs included, new tricks.
Right.
There's no question.
I'm sure she can. She's just having a very hard time getting it going.
How long has this been?
Well, for a week now. She moved in the new building a week ago.
Well, if she's making no headway, she's either not doing something right or the dogs have a reason, whatever that might be, to be afraid of the stairs.
We have two stairs in our house because we're rich. No, one is a back stairwell, which is carpeted, and one is hardwood in the front. And I'll be honest with you, Kona doesn't like coming down the hardwood because with the nails, they can slip.
Right, exactly. Right. So, as I say, if the stairs, the stairs are carpeted, you're better off. I mean, there may not be.
Yeah, sure they are.
Yeah, so if you're not sure, what you could do is buy a rug runner inexpensively and eventually begin cutting away at that.
Ah,
you know, you
good idea, Steve.
Yeah.
See, it takes so long to train a dog. I want results overnight, not this one step at a time thing.
I know.
Good luck to you, Joe.
I know.
Thanks.
Thank you, Joe.
Steve, remember Peanut, the gibbon that I had for many, many years? He would only travel by way of escalator. No matter where we would go, he would only travel by way of an escalator.
And he walked up it, too.
He wouldn't just stay still.
Because that
always
bugs you.
Yeah, he would.
You trained
walk
him well.
Thank you, Wendy.
But when you went to city to city, I understood, you would fly in, and so would he.
Yes.
He would skydive down.
Skydive, yeah.
Yeah, into trees.
In every city that allowed it, there's certain cities that
of
have
course
restrictions.
But no skydiving gibbons. Yeah, I understand.
We're on the air, you guys. You realize this?
I didn't know that.
Mentioned something about science. There are a lot of people who can't have cats because they're allergic to cats, but that may be a thing of the past now?
Yes, we're getting to that.
That's pretty huge.
It's incredible. I mean, can you imagine as a scientist waking up one morning and saying, I am going to do something about all those people, which is about 20% of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a
are
huge
allergic
number.
To cats?
Yeah, that are allergic to cats. So when you're allergic to cats, you're not allergic to the being of the cat, you're allergic to a protein in their saliva.
Dander.
Is it
no,
the dander?
It's a protein.
Oh, okay.
It's a protein in their saliva.
Yeah.
It actually has a name. FELD1 is the name of the protein. That's important to know in case
FELD1.
In case I test you later.
All right.
Now what the cats do is he's actually writing it down. What the cats do is they groom themselves because that's what cats do, right? It's a real sticky protein.
Yeah.
Then the hair goes all over the place over the course of time.
Right.
And it's a sticky protein. So it sticks on walls. It sticks on furniture. Sticks on the floor.
Yeah.
Sticks on people.
Yeah.
Sticks everywhere. And that is what people are allergic to. So a scientist at Purina, and I suppose an entire team, has figured out a way to neutralize that protein. So we are no longer allergic to it. It's really quite
incredible. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Have they been working on this for centuries?
It would.
For how long?
I don't know how many years, a couple of years.
But it's problem
and
solved.
And they tried it out,
yeah.
And it works.
Always? Like you said, 20% of people were allergic to cats.
It works like 90-something percent of the time.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, there are people, so it's incredible at several levels. First of all, there are people that live with cats that are allergic, that pop decongestants every day,
yeah.
And don't have a relationship that they could have with their cat,
yeah.
Because they don't even want to touch their cat, but they love cats. The second thing are people who develop allergies, or families that come together, and either he or she turns out to be allergic to cats.
Right.
Oh, guess where the cat goes?
Right.
To the shelter, or just is booted outside. It's one of the big reasons why cats are given up to shelters.
Yeah.
And it's also a huge reason for cats not being adopted. So if we could change all that, wow.
Steve, great. How will this affect couples where one of the team is lying, they hate cats, but they say, I wish we could have a cat, but I'm allergic. That's going to ruin that relationship, isn't it?
I think Jim Samuels.
Jim Samuels?
What?
He's a divorce lawyer.
Oh.
All right.
I don't know.
That
I
was.
Don't, yeah.
What about that kitty bubble suit that you came up with for people that were allergic to cats?
Yeah, will those still be sold? Because I've sold a lot of those kitty bubble suits.
I've not heard about that before.
Yeah.
Bill was hard at work on
it. Yeah, made a lot of money on those.
He knows things in the pet world I just do not
thank
know.
Thank you.
When are you on next, and what will you be talking about? I love listening to you.
Thank you. I'm on 6:30 on Sunday morning, and I'm not sure what we're talking about yet this Sunday, but I can assure you it will be interesting.
Something pet-related, probably?
Probably, yeah. Yes. Yes.
Best place for people to find you if they have questions or just want to say hello, Steve.
Or you can read about all the things we've talked about or see me in a hot car. So what I did...
A hot car meaning temperature-wise?
You did a video of you sweating?
Yeah, someone thought that was a good idea. I wore my wife's wake... I don't know. I wore my wife's fake fur coat. Because dogs are always wearing a fur coat. I put on a winter hat. Went up to the roof of the Anti-Cruelty
Society.
Probably
looked like Chet Kopick Jr. that day.
It was,
rest his soul.
Yes. It was 82 degrees. It wasn't even that hot out. We opened the window a crack, and the GoPro camera died.
Oh,
that's how hot it was.
Too hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the temperature gauge thing, we bought a little thermometer at Walmart or something like that. It went up to 125, and you saw this thing go up, 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 and then it hit the end of it, and it stopped working.
Just don't leave your dogs in cars. Plus, I mean, they can injure themselves. They
trying to get out sometimes. Yeah, yeah.
Just leave them at home where they're happy. All put the TV on for them. And
that's fair warning.
Yeah.
Let them watch Facts of Life.
Yes. Yeah.
Facts of Life?
I don't know.
The TV show or the old movie?
What's the old movie?
Bob Hope, Lucille Ball movie.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow. Very good,
that's
Steve.
That's a fact of life.
All right. Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Much puppy love to you.
and kitten purrs back to you.
All right. Thank you.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
I feel like I haven't seen Eric Zorn in several weeks.
Well, you've been gone for a bit, and Eric was gone last week.
People will talk.
People were talking.
We're fiddle camp together.
Yeah, we had to diffuse a lot of rumors about that. Tell us about fiddle camp.
It's in the mountains of North Carolina.
John Cougar Fiddle Camp?
John
is that
Cougar
the one you went
camp.
To?
No, it's called the Swannanoa Gathering, and happens every year for like the last 25 years or so. And they run on the campus of Warren Wilson College, which is a kind of a crunchy school just outside of Asheville. And there are about 250 of us who show up there.
From all over
the
country or the
world?
All over the world.
In fact, one of the really amazing fiddlers there was a young woman from Cuba who spoke almost no English, but she plays American vernacular music incredibly well. It's amazing. And there are people from Ireland and the Netherlands who play this kind of music that in a way that you would think that they grew up in the hills there. So.
Who is considered to be of all the fiddlers, who's the hottest commodity right now?
The hottest commodity? That's a really good question. Well, I would say one of the things that's great about this music is that, like, your idols are there.
Yeah.
It's not this big, not that big a world.
Yeah.
And one of my all-time favorite fiddlers is a guy named Bruce Molsky, who's out in Massachusetts. And
you got to see him?
Oh, he was there. He was there, and he was teaching classes. I took a class from him. But one night, I'm sitting there playing with some people. We're sitting in a circle, and I'm trying to remember this tune. I'm playing it. And all of a sudden, I hear in my ear, I hear it exactly the way I want to be playing it, because it's the... And I turn around, and it's Bruce Molsky sitting right behind me playing it.
Whoa.
just the way he plays it, you know, on YouTube and on his recordings. So I go, oh, that's why it sounded so good. It's a really great experience like that. And
did you tell Bruce Molsky that how much he means to you? Did you explain that?
I told him that directly. I should have told him that, but people really do sort of worship at his feet in a lot of ways. He's very good. And there are a lot of other... one of the really interesting things to me about this kind of music, the style of music, is that it's that young women are really the hot, young, incredible fiddlers. A lot of them are women.
How come?
It used to be that it was not considered something that women did. There were very few women fiddlers, and then they had special women, you know, girls or women's fiddling contests that they kept
fiddling
separate.
Marcy, remember? We had her as a guest the loop years ago.
But now, I'm not sure why it is exactly, but if you ask me to list my 10 favorite fiddlers, I'd say at least half of them are young women. They're really...
That's encouraging.
Really amazing. So it's catching on in that area. I mean, it's never going to... It's a niche kind of music, right?
Yeah.
It's old-time American square dance fiddling, and I've been doing it for a long time. My son is playing it, and he's quite good.
I bet that makes you
someday
very proud.
Someday he's going to be as good as Bruce Moll. Oh, yeah, it does. He's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So it's just one. It's like a little hobby, and we spent a whole week, and we're, you know, taking classes all day and playing all night, and it's...
And are you better because of it?
Oh yeah,
you play better.
Absolutely,
good.
Yeah. It's pretty fun.
Then it's this
transition back to work. Wendy was there. She will remember.
Wendy, you were there. Was it exciting?
My fiddling's a little different than yours.
It's very different from...
It's very popular.
In other parts of the world, has it caught on the way it has in the United States?
Well, it's an American vernacular music. It comes from, you know, there's Texas fiddling, there's North Carolina fiddling.
Appalachian music.
There's a whole bunch of it's Appalachian music. And so what will happen is you'll get these people together who are real scholars of it, who'll say, like, well, this comes from, you know, this county and, you know, in North Carolina, and this comes from that county, and they play the various fiddle styles. Now, a lot of that stuff is becoming blended because of YouTube, because so many people are learning not from, you know, the feet of the masters, but they're learning from them on YouTube.
Yeah.
So a lot of those fiddle styles are different. There's Missouri fiddling, there's Illinois fiddling, there's you know, things that are, then they're all kind of mushed together.
But everyone gets along. There's no fiddle fighting.
There's no hostility. But
okay.
But it's really you know, to be able to play with your idols.
That must be amazing.
It's a quite a trip.
And like Marshall Tucker Band, all these, you know, Southern rock bands always had fiddlers in their band.
Yeah, no, those fiddlers are often, they play in a style that's much fancier than I play in. You know, this you know, Texas swing fiddling or this really hot bluegrass fiddling.
Yeah.
A lot notier than the kind of music that I play. And there's a lot more talented than
I. How long have you been doing this?
Well, I've been doing it since college, but I really, when Ben took it up about 5-6 years ago, I began studying it a lot harder so I could try to keep
because
up
he was better than you, wasn't he?
very, very quickly better than,
but you want that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's good
absolutely.
To see that.
Oh, it's great to see, yeah. And in fact, he's leaving in a day or two. He's going to go down. There's the annual Woodstock of this kind of music. About 5,000 people show up in a place called Clifftop, North Carolina, and they camp out for like 9 days and they play.
Is it called Wood Stump there?
It's called the Appalachian String Band Festival, but everyone calls it Clifftop because it's in Clifftop.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
North Carolina, and it's this huge, like I say, it's like everybody just camps out and they just play, and
that's perfect.
It's really fun. It's a nice little hobby, and very, very different from opining on the news of the day.
I would imagine.
Break, so.
But since you're here, let's talk about the news too.
Can we do a new segment where he plays the fiddle as he opines about the news?
I could probably do it.
That would be fun to listen to.
I'll play a very simple tune and play it, or I'll bring in some recordings. I'll play it
in the background,
a little background music.
I would like that. All right, let's look at that for next week.
Yeah, but what I wanted to talk about today is this a good time to talk about what I want to talk about today? That while I was gone, I was, of course, reading the papers, and there's a new law in Illinois that requires all single-use bathrooms in, you know, convenience stores or public to be labeled as non-gender. You know, you can't say this is a men's room, a woman's
single
room.
Single-use meaning?
Meaning it's
only one person, a single
there's
stall.
There's actually one here in the station.
That's how it should be, and that's how it should have been all along, because
yes.
If there's one bathroom that two people can use, don't you save time?
Well,
and
no,
space?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. This is what we're talking about here is just a restroom that is...
Either or.
You go in, you lock the
right.
door, and it's either or.
Yeah.
And in a lot of places... You used to see it, and you see this like when you're. I did a lot of driving last week, but you pull into a convenience store,
oh, yeah.
and there'll be two single use restrooms, and one's women's, one's men's.
Mm-hmm. Stupid.
And it's always like, well, and the line will be, if there's any line at all, it'll be in front of the women's room, right?
Because
we take longer,
take a little longer. I don't
freshen up our lipstick,
putting on their makeup. You know, I don't
that
know,
sort of thing.
You know, whatever it is that they do,
fiddling
probably, and.
Okay,
and
legitimately fiddling,
yeah, no.
Wendy. Legitimately.
And this is something that you think it just makes common sense. And what I'm trying to find out is there were only five people who voted against it in the Illinois House, and nobody voted against it in the Illinois Senate. So it was like, you don't see that very often in
right.
politics these days. Some almost unanimity. I'm trying to figure out what the possible objection would be to this.
We should call them.
What would it be?
Well, it might be.
I can't figure out why anyone would object to that.
There is a philosophy that just says, we overregulate. And I understand that. It's like we're telling business owners, well, these are the signs you've got to have outside of your bathroom. And there's some people who just say that that's enough. We don't need government getting involved in every little decision like this, which I see that, right?
Yeah, but it's saving them if they only have to have one bathroom as opposed to the space for two.
It's kind of amazing. Well, yeah, exactly. And it's kind of amazing that it actually came to this, that you had to have a law.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You just think that places, and I've seen certainly there are places like the Old Town School of Folk Music had some single-use bathrooms that were labeled men and women until a year or two ago, and then they just...
Bathroom.
You know, bathroom.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, it's but there's another issue that comes up, which is that there is another movement to have, you know, all gender or non-gender specific bathrooms, you know, public restrooms where you have, you know, a row of stalls.
And, oh, yeah. Like on Ally McBeal where men and women went in and used the bathroom.
Like in Ally McBeal.
Yes.
Yeah, and there was some controversy. I was listening to a podcast from the New York Times, and Michelle Goldberg, one of their columnists, she was at Netroots Nation, which is this gathering of ultra-liberals just recently. And she said that they'd converted most of their bathrooms in the convention center into all-gender restrooms. So if you're a woman, you had to walk by men at urinals to go to the bathroom.
I don't like that. I got to be honest with you.
Well, and she didn't either. And she said that there was one bathroom in another part of the building that had not been converted. And it was for women and had about three stalls. And she said there was a huge line of women waiting to use it. And so it becomes a question like, well, I have the same feeling as Wendy does, which is like at some point it's weird because you're a little bit torn because you realize that the point of having this is to break down, you know, the gender binary, and there are people who are trans or non-gender conforming, whatever, who feel, you know, threatened by, you know, in a bathroom setting or confused or, you know, the situation is not comfortable for them.
Yeah.
So to make them feel more comfortable to have this option. But I think there are a lot of people who feel like Wendy doesn't, who and I do. And I don't know, Bill's looking at me like...
He doesn't use
public restrooms ever.
He doesn't. He just like opens the window or what?
Well,
he just doesn't go. I think he's a Borg.
Men are animals. There's no sense of aim. There's
Well, maybe this is the justification for not having, for having a single-use room for men to let them...
Yes, men are dirtier, but there have been years and years ago that, you know... There's a single-use bar bathroom, and the men are flipping through it real quickly. I have used so many men's bathrooms, and it's gross. But when you have to go, you just get in, you get out.
It is, in your experience, it is
much dirtier.
Men's room is grosser.
Always.
Well, then maybe that's a justification for it. For having them.
Yeah, but you know what? Whatever you look like, go in that bathroom. You know what I mean? And no one asks questions. No one cards you as to what bathroom you go into.
You can get a look when you're going in or going out, right? If you emerge from the men's room, will people
Do they ever say anything?
Like, no, what, not anymore.
Yeah, I think not anymore is probably the right answer.
I don't even think, but years ago either.
But this idea of gender inclusive bathrooms, it seems like you could have, and this also opens the window into this conversation about locker rooms.
The window should be open there.
in the men's room, you know what I mean. In Palatine, they were having this controversy about a trans girl who wanted to use the girls' locker room.
Yeah.
And the question was, you know, if the cisgendered girls were made uncomfortable by this, how do you accommodate everyone? How do you make people feel safe and included and welcome
and
so on?
Safety issue. It's just everybody's changing.
I don't think it's. I think you're right. I think it's not literally a safety issue, but it's an emotional
people bring
safety
that
issue.
Up.
Yes, they bring that up. Like men are going to follow little girls into bathrooms.
It's simply not true. And you know what? Maybe in my high school, when we changed in the girls' locker room, maybe there was someone who was transgendering then, and I didn't know. I don't sit around and look at everybody.
Well, my daughter, who's now in college, but when she was in high school, I asked her about this because it was raging up at a different area, and I said, "Does it? What do you think about that?" And she was just extremely nonchalant about it. She was like, "I don't care."
Yeah,
you know, it's not like people strip down to nothing and prance around the locker room. It's like you usually keep your underwear on, and kids in high school gym classes actually, I don't think shower much.
Don't have enough time.
It doesn't happen. Yeah, they don't have the time, so it's not like people are getting a free show or something.
No, it's not about
or that someone would go through. This is the thing about the whole transgender issue, which is that someone would go through everything that you need to go through to identify as transgender,
mm-hmm.
or to become whatever the proper terminology would be, in order to
score,
ogle people.
Yeah.
I mean that's completely absurd. So there's a certain basic insensitivity at the core mm-hmm. of that question. But I do have another issue that came up at Fiddle Camp.
Is it a big issue
having to do with this very thing? And
is
should I
anywhere-
mention it now?
No, Eric, don't wait. Can you wait 2 minutes and 35 seconds?
I think I can.
All right, Eric Zorn with another issue. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorn is here, fine columnist for your Chicago Tribune, co-host of the Mincing Rascals, which won a huge award this year.
An enormous award. It was
tell
the
everybody what
Silver
you won.
Silver Dome Award.
It's pretty good.
The Illinois Broadcasters Association.
It was the like best podcast.
It was the best non-broadcast use of audio or something like that. It was kind of a strange category that you'd think that broadcasters wouldn't pay attention to because we're not broadcasting.
Right.
We're just podcasting. John Williams, your friend John Williams.
You were up against Game of Thrones. That's a weird category.
We were, well, we clobbered him.
Yeah.
We beat him.
Good.
So what I wanted to, coming out of this conversation about bathrooms, we're talking about gendered bathrooms, and mm-hmm. in fact, there's a new law in Illinois that says that if you have a single-use bathroom, you know, just one that one person can go into at a time,
right.
that you can no longer, as a business, can no longer label them for men and for women.
Yeah.
Which Wendy and I agree makes a lot of sense, and I think you abstained.
Doesn't apply to me.
You abstained.
Yeah.
But this happened to me at Fiddle Camp. We were at the class started, and the young woman who's teaching the class said, wanted us to go around the room, and she said, I want to know what you want to get out of this class. And I want to know which pronouns you use.
Referring to yourself?
Referring to yourself.
Okay.
So you would say, you know, my name is Eric. I use he, him, his, I think is how it's said. And that's, we went around the room and asked everyone to specify their pronouns. And I noticed that a number of people, including me, I'm not comfortable with that kind of signaling. I felt like there's something about it that felt a little bit forced and awkward because it wasn't the kind of situation where you would be referring to people in the third person a lot. It seemed to me like more of
unnecessary.
More of a question of like, were you willing to make a statement of support for trans people or gender nonconforming people, which I am supportive of them, mm-hmm. by the way. But I felt like this felt a little performative.
Yeah.
And so we went around the room and. I would say about half the people who they said, well, you know, my name's Bob, and I'm here because I want to learn about the Boeing style that you use, and some of them would, about half of them went and did the pronouns, and the other half just
half
didn't
went
mention.
Into just saying,
I wouldn't say it. I would just say I'm Wendy. I'm here to play the
yes,
fiddle.
Yes, that's
but you had that right. You could have done what Wendy just said.
I did do what Wendy said, and I noticed that and some of the young there's some young people there. I mean, not, I mean, these are like preteen, like not preteens, but young teenagers, 13, 14, 15. And I would say maybe most of them weren't comfortable enough answering the pronoun question.
How about just call me by my name?
Well, that's what would happen. See, and that's why it seems a little strange, because you don't often in a situation like that refer to somebody across the room and use a pronoun. It's more a question of like, are you going to make a statement by specifying your pronouns? And do you guys get email every once in a while from someone who at the end of they'll sign their name, and at the end they'll say so and so, have their title, and then say preferred pronouns?
No, I've never seen that.
I've never seen that either.
Well, you guys don't get
we don't get email.
You guys, well, no, you don't. You don't have as lefty friends as I do, I guess, or context. But I did learn.
How often do you get that?
You know.
With some regularity?
Some regularity, yeah.
I'm surprised.
But I learned something in looking into this, that the term preferred pronouns is no longer acceptable, considered property, or saying that somebody identifies.
That's not considered
bad form, because it seems to offer an option. This is what I've read. It seems to offer an option to people of not accepting. Like, this is my preferred pronoun, but you have an option not to use it. That say preferred means that there's an option,
yeah,
and not declaring it to be true.
It is getting so complicated to just have a conversation or send someone an email. Just let's treat each other respectfully and call everybody by their name.
Well, I tend to agree with that. I do have one of my wife's former colleagues identified as they.
Yeah.
She wanted to be referred to as she, he. It's difficult. They wanted to be referred to as they, mm-hmm. right? Not he or she. And my wife and I, you know, we're both like, okay, that's fine. That doesn't no skin off my nose to do that. But it was really difficult. Sometimes we would be talking about this person at home, just, you know, casual about this is happening and who's in charge of it and so on. And we were always having to correct one another.
Yeah.
You know, Johanna would say, like, she's doing this. I say, yep, not she, they. She'd go, that's right, they. And even in conversation with each other, not without her being present, we were trying to get that right. Now, Johanna runs this conference every year. About 800 people show up at the in town here. It's called the Third Coast International Audio Festival. Mm-hmm. And on their name tags, they have your pronouns that you want to use. And you don't have to have this on your name tag, but a lot of people do. She said about 40% of the people have on their name tags. And sometimes it's pretty obvious, I would think, what pronouns you'd have. But,
right.
But people use that, I think, not to clear up ambiguity in some cases, but just as a way of suggesting what your personal politics right. are about this issue.
Yeah.
I see that, but it's almost like, you know, putting your name tag, I am not a racist, I am not a sexist,
yeah.
I am not transphobic and so on. So it's an interesting situation. So the fact that we went around this room and about half the people, including some of the young people, seemed to be uncomfortable with the whole...
But no one called them out on it, saying, do we need to do this part of it? Nobody asked
one did. In some ways, you don't want to bring
right.
this kind of, you know, this kind of political stuff into...
It's a fiddle class, for gosh sake.
But, you know, you want to be inclusive. You certainly want people to feel welcome,
of
right?
Of course you do.
But yeah. But anyway.
That's Eric Zorn. He writes for the Chicago Tribune. Read them in the Chicago Tribune.
I want to be called Queen.
All right.
Your Majesty.
Thank you.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Don Kleppen from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.